Welcome to the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. It's March 13, 2012, and this is episode 326. From February 13 to 24, 2012, we took a group of photographers to Nagano to photograph the amazing snow monkeys for 3 days, and then went on to Hokkaido for a further 9 days. This was the fifth iteration of my now very popular Winter Wildlife Wonderland tour here in Japan. And today, and then again next week, I'm going to take you through some of the photographs that I came back with. In previous years, I've gone through a blow-by-blow account of the entire trip, usually requiring 3 or 4 episodes in a series to get through it, but the content of our trip this year was pretty much exactly the same as 2011, so I'm going to make this a two-part series, and we're going to concentrate on just 12 of my images each week and touch on the location details as necessary. If you want to hear more detail about the locations, do go back and listen to episodes 279, 281 and 282 from 2011. Before we jump in and start looking at the photos though, I'm going to take you through a little bit of the statistics about my editing process. So let's start taking a look at that now. This photography adventure has us shooting wildlife or landscapes from dawn till dusk some days, and shooting for at least 5 hours, even on the short days, so we come back with a lot of photographs. I shot just over 7,000 images in the 12 days, and I've been to these locations more times than I care to remember. I don't shoot anywhere near as many images as some of the participants for who the trip is their first visit to Japan. I won't go into detail on the actual rating system that I use, as I've covered this in other episodes, but basically I go through my images in Lightroom and give 4 stars to anything that's good enough to publish, and hit the X key to reject anything that was either technically faltered, as in blurred, or not exposed how I intended it to be. And I also just go ahead and delete perfectly good images if I was shooting in burst mode and I ended up with many images of the same subject. With wildlife, as in, you know, like a bird is flapping its wings, for example, you often use burst mode more than for other more controlled subject types, simply because you're trying to capture the best or most pleasing wing position. The same goes with the monkeys, for example. As they have incredibly expressive eyes and faces, you want to be able to capture a few variations and then pick the best later. So, you know, you generally end up shooting in burst mode. And by the time I'd finished deleting going through my first cull of the images and deleting out the duplicates and the flawed images, I was down to 4,500 images. And I managed to get that down to 417 that I had 4 stars against. The 417 images that I'd initially chose were selected as much as possible down to just a few of each subject. I'd already gone through and that was like my short list. For example, I might have 10 frames of a certain subject doing a certain activity, like the snow monkeys in a huddle. But from that, I'd only select the stronger compositions, the images that I also don't have in my library from previous years. There's not much point in reposting something that's almost identical to my previous work. I obviously don't photograph that as much as I would have done if these were my first visit to these locations, but still, if you come away with similar images, there's not much point in reposting unless it's a much higher resolution image. But I'm back there with the same cameras that I've shot for the last 3 or 4 years, so that's not going to happen. Then I spent the next week after getting back from the tour going through my selection numerous times, weeding out the lesser images And that took me until around March 4. And I was down to 120 images by that point. This was still, though, way too many to show people. So I continued to work through my images each day until I reached the tight edit of 60 images on March 9th. This can be an agonizing process, and I kicked out a whole bunch of images that I really liked, but that just didn't add anything to my image library. And I wanted to show the minimum number of images possible so as to keep my audience engaged. Even 60 would be too many for a portfolio, of course, but that's not what I'm creating here. Anyway, once I had my 60 finalists, I uploaded them to my gallery and to Flickr, and a smaller selection was added to Google+. So some of you may have already seen these, but let's jump in and start to take a look at some of the, you know, like I say, 12 images today, 12 images next week, just a really tight edit of my final selection. First, let's look at a couple of snow monkey shots, and the first of which is this huddle of five monkeys. Here was a group including the alpha male, three of the wives, probably from his harem, and a youngster. They were huddled in this way on top of a box, which is one of the reasons why I cropped it tightly like this for this image, to exclude the box. And this kind of, it's kind of an important lesson as well. Some people will choose to include the box, and that's fine, but I usually try to exclude that sort of thing. But even if that had not been the case, you often find that a tight crop can enhance an image anyway, so it's always worth bearing in mind. I also chose to photograph the monkeys at this time because they were looking this way, with the one on the left almost looking directly into the camera. These Japanese macaques have such expressive, almost human eyes that really pull you into an image. I think the eyes add so much to this image that I included it in my set, despite the large patch of darkness above the monkeys' heads. I would have much preferred to have had it, you know, just a totally white background across the top, but this wasn't possible from any angle unless I'd grown by a foot or so. I found another huddle, though, again, on top of a wooden box, but this one did have a white background, so I really liked this next shot too, especially as the two monkeys in the middle were huddling around a baby whose face we can just see poking out from between them. This adds so much to an image, in my opinion. Note that I lightened the baby's face by about half a stop of exposure in Lightroom, by brushing it on with the local adjustments tool. This just helps to bring out the face a little more as it was quite dark there, in between the two adults. By the way, the main lenses that I use at the Snow Monkeys are my 24-70 and 70-200mm lenses. You are very close to the monkeys, so close in fact that you have to be careful not to touch them when you're shooting by the pool. And these two shots that we're looking at now were made at 200mm and 165mm respectively. I only posted one monkey shot where they were actually in the water in the hot spring bath at this location, mainly because space is limited down by the pool, and I didn't spend a lot of time down there, preferring to allow as many of my group to go down there as possible. I've posted a lot of these kind of photos from previous years, though, so although you know the fewer that I did get are okay, they weren't really going to add anything to my image library. Most years, while we're at the Snow Monkeys location, we see a Japanese cerro, which is a type of antelope, high on the valley side, and I've photographed him many times, but until this year, I've never gotten any photographs that I really liked because the background was too messy or his pose was just not very interesting. This year, though, I was happy to get three shots that I really like of the Japanese cerro, and this is one of the best backgrounds that of the three shots, and the pose isn't too bad either. These are curious looking animals with their 10 centimeter or so horns that you can actually see better in the other two shots, but you can just make out in this shot too. They're thick set and their coat makes them look quite bulky, which they need to be to get through these harsh winters, but they're still quite a nice animal to shoot. This, by the way, was shot with my 300mm f2.8 lens with the 1.4x extender fitted. After the first 3 days with the snow monkeys, we flew up to Hokkaido, and for the first few days we were shooting most of the day at the Akan International Crane Center, but again, since I've shot there so many times already, I have to get something that beats my previous year's images to make it worth showing. And one that I was happy with was not of the cranes, but the white-tailed eagles that come in at 2 p.m. to steal the fish that are thrown out for the cranes. I got two frames of a pair of eagles either fighting or courting, sometimes it's hard to tell. And this is the second of the two images. I posted the first in my gallery too, showing the eagle flipped over at the bottom with another zooming in on him. And this second frame shows them just after they passed each other. I shot this one with my 5D Mark II and the 300mm f2.8 lens with the 1.4x extender fitted again. But as these guys were quite a way off, I've had to crop this one a little more than I usually like to. But I've still got enough resolution to do a 13x19 inch print, which is about as much as I can stand to crop. But I had no control over how far away these eagles would be when they did this stuff, so I have to live with that. The next shot is a single white-tailed eagle that came much closer, and although I have lots of shots of these beautiful birds in flight, I chose to keep this one because I really like the wing shape here. This is also one of the only locations where I often find myself including a bright blue sky in my shots. I'm not partial to blue skies, but this place usually gives me some nice eagle and crane shots where I think that the sky really adds to the image. This shot was made with the 300mm again, without the extender this time though, and on the 1D Mark IV, and this was only cropped very slightly this time. If you've been following this podcast for a while, you'll probably remember my distant dance photo from February 2008, which was the first time I took a workshop group to Hokkaido and we visited the Ottawa Bridge in the hope of it being cold enough and the air being still enough for there to be frost on the trees and mist over the river. Well, on that first visit, it happened and it was magical. But although we've had years when it's still been quite pretty out there, it didn't happen again quite to the same degree for the following 3 years. I've been praying for frost and mist before each trip ever since, and I think my prayers were answered a little too much this time, at least for the first few hours at the bridge this year. As the sun rose and convection kicked in, the temperature dropped from minus 21 degrees Celsius to minus 26, and there was no wind at all, but the temperature, with temperatures this low, although the trees were beautiful, there was actually too much mist to be able to see the cranes in the river. In this shot, you can see just how beautiful the scene was, and luckily there were three swans in the foreground to add interest. But you'd never know looking at this shot that there were actually around 200 majestic red-crowned cranes sleeping in the river, shrouded by the mist. This is a stitched panorama shot at 300mm on the 1DS Mark III, so a relatively wide shot. Of course, I really like this shot too. It's a beautiful scene unto itself, and if you really look closely, you can actually see some of the cranes in the left of the left side of the image in the mist. Note, by the way, that if you look at these images on my blog, make sure that you expand your browser window as wide as possible and click on the images to view them at 1280 pixels wide so that you can appreciate the detail more. Here's another photo of the swans from the last image, but this time shot at 600 millimeters, so you can see more detail in the trees to the right of the scene and the layers formed by that beautiful mist. I know that it's difficult to make out three swans here, but basically it's two swans with their heads under their wings sleeping, with one in the middle with his head up. It's important to note here too that I was shooting in manual mode, with the meter showing the image overexposed by around two stops. If I left this to my camera, the current metering system would have rendered it much darker and nowhere near as beautiful and delicate as this. This may well change with the RGB aware metering in the 5D Mark III and 1DX that will be with us shortly, but for now, this is a big issue to keep in mind in these locations. There was a couple of hours after sunrise where the mist was simply too thick to see the cranes in the distance. And also, with it being so cold, the cranes took their time livening up and moving around. That was a bit of a blessing in disguise, though, as it would have been totally frustrating if we could hear the cranes honking and dancing but not see them at all. Fortunately, though, the mist did start to clear at around 8:15, and we were able to get some very atmospheric shots like this one, where you can perhaps just make out two cranes honking in the middle of the frame with a flock of pintail ducks flying over their heads. This, again, is a stitch to extend the image over to the right a little. I made a note to continue shooting multiple images across the scene once I'd shot something that I thought might work, and I was pleased that I did. I ended up with some very wide panoramas that I'm looking forward to printing, but for the web, let's look at one more that's, it's not as wide as the, I've got one that's like 1:5 ratio. This one's more like 1:3, but let's take a look at one more before we move on. Here I noticed a crane taking a short flight from one part of the river to another and grabbed a couple of frames and then again ran across the scene for a few more frames to enable me to make a panorama. I actually posted just the single image with the crane in flight as well as this panorama to give me more printing options, but I prefer these wide versions, especially with large prints in mind. After an amazing few hours at Ottawa Bridge, which incidentally translates to the Sound of Wings Bridge, we went for breakfast and then back to the crane centre. Here's one of the images that I got of the cranes that I simply could not throw out. The orthodox photographer in me wanted to throw this out because there was too little space on the left side of the frame. Basically, this was one of those shots, though, where I'd noticed the crane flying overhead, and by the time I'd raised my camera and focused, the bird was a bit too far past, and I didn't have time to reframe. For some reason, though, maybe the artist in me, as opposed to the technician, I really liked this. As much as I tried, I couldn't throw it out. The following morning, we went back to the bridge, but it wasn't cold enough to get any frost on the trees. So we decided not to shoot there, and as we got ready to go back to the bus, my friend photographer Jeremy Woodhouse, who we met most days in Nagano and Hokkaido, told me about two apple trees nearby that I didn't know about. He actually drove around there to show us where they were, so rather than going home empty-handed this morning, we spent 20 or 30 minutes photographing these lovely trees in the snow-covered hills. I've learned lots of little added bonus spots over the years from friends like Jeremy and another, for example, Japanese photographer Yoshiaki Kobayashi. And as the tour leader, it's great to have a few options like this. So I'm very grateful to these guys for sharing as they do. And of course, I share my own information with others just as much. so that we all end up with better tours each year and in turn happier customers. On the third day in Hokkaido, 6 days or halfway into the tour, we moved over to the Kusharo Lake where we photographed the hooper swans that spend the winter in the little pools warmed by hot springs that flow into the lake and prevent it from totally freezing over. Here is the last image for today, which I shot lying down in the snow with my angle finder on my camera so that I could look down into the finder rather than straining my neck trying to look across into the finder on the back of the camera. I had my camera rested on my hand, which was in turn rested in the snow, and framed up the scene waiting for a swan to spread its wings like this. On the first day with the swans, it was bitterly cold, so I didn't want to lay in the snow for too long, so I was pleased when after about 20 minutes the swan did as I wanted. There was also another swan positioned perfectly in the mist to the left, which adds to the overall atmosphere of the shot, so I'm very pleased with this one. So that's our 12 shots for today. Let's wrap it up here for this week, and we'll pick up the trail later on this same day with more swan shots from the Kusharo Lake in episode 327 next week. Note that I'm about to release details of 2 Snow Monkey and Hokkaido photo adventures in 2013. The first will be with Chris Marquardt, so we'll be providing some of the workshop elements in German, although I'll also be there, so even if you don't speak German, Chris and I will be helping the group in English too, with the tour starting from January 28th and running through to February 8th, 2013. The second tour is going to be from February 18th through March 1st, 2013, and you can see details of both tours on my mbpworkshops.com site. If you'd like to receive notice as soon as details are released, you can also sign up for my tour newsletters at mbp.ac/news, and I'll put a link to this and my workshops website in the show notes for this week's episode. Note too that although I can't say who it is this week, if you are catching up on this podcast more than a few days after this episode is released on March 13, 2012, you'll be able to go to the mbpworkshops.com website or via the newsletter and see that we have a very special guest with us on this second tour. I'll be able to mention who that is next week, but I have to tell you that I'm really excited about this, and I think you will be too. One last bit of housekeeping before we finish, and that is that I was interviewed recently by my friend Iberian X Perillo of the Candid Frame podcast. I've secretly wanted to be on that podcast for many years, and it turns out that Iberian X hadn't asked me because he thought he'd already interviewed me a long while ago. When we were chatting last year and the subject came up, I reminded Iberian X that I hadn't been on his show, so he kindly changed that. If you don't already subscribe to The Candid Frame, please do. It's one of the few photography-related podcasts that I listen to regularly, and I know you'll enjoy it. I'll put a link into the show notes to my interview on The Candid Frame, or you can just go over to thecandidframe.com. Thanks very much for listening today, and remember that you can find me on Google+ and Twitter, etc. All links are on the top page at martinbaileyphotography.com, so do drop by and take a look. I'll be back next week with another episode, but in the meantime, you take care and have a great week, whatever you're doing. Bye-bye.